Welcome to the America's Jobs Team podcast, powered by Consultant Connect. For the month of April, all our interviews with economic developers and site consultants will be solely focused on their reaction and response to the current coronavirus pandemic. We will be releasing these on a daily basis, and we hope you find value in each episode as we all fight for our communities. On today's episode, Ron Kitchens talks with Quentin Messer, President and CEO at the New Orleans Business Alliance. Let's listen in.
Hey, Quentin. It's great to talk to you. I wish it was under better terms, but for the listening audience, just very quickly describe your organization.
So thank you for affording me this opportunity. Good morning. I'm with the New Orleans Business Alliance. We're a local public-private partnership responsible for economic development in New Orleans, Louisiana.
So what New Orleans has been certainly all over the national news is one of those places that, you know, hot spots along with Detroit, New York, and, you know, previously Seattle. What's that feel like on the ground? And, you know, what's your perception of where, you know, New Orleans is both as a community, but in terms of economic development that the audience, which is exclusively economic developers and site selectors, what's your perception of where you're at?
It's tense. People are nervous. We have had, we are a hot spot. But the good news is that I think our political leadership, from our governor, John Bell Edwards, to our mayor, LaToya Cantrell, and city council members, were very clear. And as soon as we got the word, they actually moved pretty quickly. In fact, our mayor took some heat for canceling a variety of St. Patrick's Day celebrations. She took a lot of heat, and people said, oh, she's overacting, and clearly that wasn't the case. Look, I think there are three things I want people to know about New Orleans. Yes, we need help, but we're not helpless. Two, the reason why things have sort of spiked here is not because the coronavirus just found great breeding grounds. There are a lot of people that had underlying conditions that made them more susceptible to it, whether it was diabetes or heart disease or hypertension, things of that nature. And I think the last thing is that we are discovering how much we have very strong healthcare delivery. Despite that, you know, we need supplies, but, you know, Ochsner Health System or LCMC Health, LSU, Tulane, Xavier, HCA, Tulane, we have a big, you know, Martin VA facility. So I think it's allowing us to really think about how to leverage this in the future.
I think it's interesting. One of the things that, I was thinking about as I looked at places that are, how different places are dealing with this. Do you believe that New Orleans has dealt with this so decisively because there's already a crisis strategies involved because of hurricanes and the need to have a more understanding of crisis management than other places?
I think it's a great point. I mean, I do think that there is a mentality where, you know, we're used to evacuating. We're used to having to hunker down, shelter in place, and get food stuff, and as we call it, make groceries, and do all that for multiple weeks. But I think that what people, and people are trying to draw it, this will be the 15th year since the tragedy of Katrina, in August, and people are trying to draw parallels. And as I tell people, this is much more dire in a way, because at least the rest of the country outside the Gulf South was still operating. You know, New Orleans could go somewhere.
Yep.
This is enveloping the entire world. But having said that, New Orleanians are tough. You know, Governor Cuomo talks about the toughness of New Yorkers, and I lived in New York for 12 years. New York's tough, but there's something about New Orleanians who find a way to even be tough and have fun at the same time. I mean, people are still entertaining, you know, musicians are performing on their porch and things of that nature. So we're going to make it through.
How's it affecting your own organization? Because you are a public-private partnership, and I've done a bunch of these interviews, and then I did some over the weekend, took some calls from friends who were struggling with, hey, how do we address, you know, invoicing clients? What are your recommendations? And so how do you think it's going to affect, and I know we're too early to know the ultimate, but what are your thoughts on how it's going to affect your organization specifically?
Well, I think there's really three things. I mean, I think number one, we are having to change our organizational behavior. So for example, we launched and have raised over $500,000 for a gig economy workers relief fund. And if you would have, and we seeded that with $100,000, we made sacrifices throughout the organization to sort of seed it, and then we raised an additional over $400,000. If we're not in the business typically of being direct grant givers to the public, but you know, we realize there are a bunch of gig workers, musicians, visual artists, drive share workers, the festival season being postponed, who was going to support these folks? And this was before we knew about the CARES Act, so we had to step up there. And I think that's part of a reorientation to direct services. We had been, like a lot of economic development organizations, focused on systems level change, but you now have to reach individuals as best as you can because individual folks are changing. As far as us operationally, we've frozen all hiring. We've had a couple of people who have resigned. They've gotten great opportunities. We're not going to backfill those positions. We are drastically reducing travel. There are a lot of people who deserve salary increases, but unfortunately we're probably not going to be able to do that. So it is a concern, but we have plans in place. We've tried to be very forward leaning. So we're optimistic. And I think that, now more than anything, economic development has to be considered an essential service, as essential as public safety and infrastructure and public health and youth programming, because what we see is economic insecurity and vulnerability. If you don't have a well-diversified economy, you're going to struggle once the economy reopens.
I think you're dead on, and that's something that we have to ensure that, and both you and I sit on the board of the International Economic Development Council, and those are the things we got to talk about, is better telling that story of, you know, that essential service, and that we are, you know, we're doing coaching, not just one-on-one with companies, you know, we're doing consulting with, you know, people who have no employees and how they're going to come back from this. And, you know, I have a friend who, you know, one of the things you just said reminded me of the discussion I had this weekend was, you know, musicians, you know, went from being able to sell recordings and then digitizing the music, said, nope, you have to, live performances are the only place you're going to make any money. And now live performances are certainly gone today. And none of us know in the future whether people are going to be willing to gather together for these big live things. And it's one of those things I really worry about. And New Orleans isn't New Orleans without live music.
No, you're right. I mean, it's
you know, as I look across my office, I'm looking at a signed Kermit Ruffin's, you know, album on the wall from the last time I was in New Orleans and got to hear, you know, Kermit play at Rockin' Bowl. Yeah. And you know, I can't imagine not going to New Orleans and seeing great music.
Well, the plan is when it's safe, not only safe for patrons but safe from the musicians, is for us to be back. The good news, and this is, we have to find rays of sunlight amid this, is that a lot of our big festivals got postponed. They didn't get canceled. They got postponed. So if we can, not if, when we get through the apex and when we get through probably April, May, maybe the first half of June, and we begin to look post Independence Day, we expect a tremendous last half of the year. Now, we got to get there, and we got to make sure that entrepreneurs' mental health is intact. I'm very concerned that, you know, people are taking on all types of pressures, internalizing things, trying to be responsible, because that's what small business owners do. A restaurateur, a tour bus operator, a music venue, it's like family. I'm very concerned. But when we get through that, it's going to be pretty strong. But it's how people make it in this meantime is what keeps me up at night.
Yeah, no, me as well. You know, what are the things that economic development organizations should be doing today that are going to impact the success of their communities 9 months or 18 months from now?
Wow. I think there are three big things. One is we have to think about what a post COVID-19 economy looks like. And what I mean by that is, and just in our case in New Orleans, we are built on four big industries: tourism, hospitality, maritime, oil and gas, and agribusiness. The first three are very prone to pandemics and epidemics. So we've got to figure out how to move into the knowledge sector, how to take advantage of our expertise in healthcare delivery and bio, and how we can get into software development, and how we can get into industrial sterilization and cleaning and hazard mitigation and telemedicine. So I think it's going to force and accelerate a conversation about how you do that. I think also we also have to think about how do large-scale policy changes, whether it's paid family leave, higher minimum wage, all important, but you got to make sure that it's scaled properly and doesn't disproportionately hurt small businesses who can't pass on those additional costs to their customer. And I think the final thing we have to think about is really understanding what it means to get into direct services provision. I can't speak about other places, but in New Orleans, we have a great system and network of technical assistance providers for small businesses. We have never wanted to be in direct competition with them, but we have small businesses saying, I need help. I need someone to help me think about how to fill out these applications from the SBA and tell me how I talk to my bank or how do I have a stronger banker relationship. So we have to deal with that and not be perceived as being directly in competition with our local technical assistance providers. It'll be a bit of a dance, but we'll get there.
No, I think that's great advice. Look in your crystal ball, and what do you see for economic development? What 4 years from now, what will great economic development organizations look like?
Wow. Well, I think they'll have three characteristics. I think they will have to convince their political leadership that economic development is not a luxury, but it's an essential service, just like public safety and infrastructure and youth programming or elder care. I think secondly, they will simultaneously be focused on the big picture, future looking, structural changes, but also they will have to do direct service provision. They will have to be nimble and flexible to kind of step in the gap. And I think the third thing is 4 years from now, and as you mentioned, Ron, we both serve on the board of IADC. I think we've got to make sure that IADC voice continues to be magnified and amplified. And we have to figure out a way to educate board members for those of us who have economic development organizations with boards, that our boards really understand what economic development means. Mm-hmm. And because a lot of people are running around saying they are economic developers. We've got to thoughtfully figure out how to put around some guardrails around the industry.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice, because it just confuses. In these times of crisis, it creates confusion, which slows down the recovery, which creates hard feelings. And, you know, like I said, we did this grant program. And, you know, for every dollar we were able to give, we had a demand for another 12. And the pain of these small businesses, it'll be a long, long time before I forget what this feels like. And so we've just got to do, and frankly, I don't want to forget what it feels like, because that's what's got to inspire us to change the lives and the opportunities for people. So my friend, you're doing great things. You're in a great city. It truly is an American jewel. And I can't wait till I'm sitting in a bar somewhere, listening to great music with you, having a conversation about how we all came out of this. So I treasure you for being with us today.
Hey, thanks for the opportunity. I can't wait to welcome you back to the greatest city in America, in my opinion, New Orleans.
Awesome. Can't wait to see you there. Thanks, Quentin.
Thank you. Take care.
Quentin had really amazing insight and advice for us all. Don't forget to tune in every weekday for more interviews with economic developers and site consultants sharing their responses and actions to the COVID-19 crisis. The America's Jobs Team podcast is powered by Consultant Connect and sponsored by Research on Investment and Gazelle AI.